Welcome everyone to episode 27 of the Business of Sports. My name is Ahmed Al-Ghouli. I am your host. And as always, my co-host, Mr. Rob Biel, joins me on the show. Rob, how are you, buddy? How's things?
I'm good, my friend. Back from some travel. Good to be home and good to be back on with you this week.
My absolute pleasure, buddy. Another big week. Lots to talk about. And a group that's becoming our regular guests. Every week we seem to be talking about them again. The Saudi Investment Fund is at it again. This time a completely different sport. Tennis. Here we go. So Saudi Arabia has now inquired about investing in the ATP, which means now that we might have another comical situation like we had with the LIV Golf and PGA Tour. So pretty much what's happened is that Saudi Arabia has pretty much gone and met with the ATP, you know, negotiations behind the scenes, so on. And they've said to them that, I mean, you guys, you know, you could do some more funding. We could enhance things for you. You could, you know, we can give you funding to drive your media, your data, and technology advancements, and, you know, really change things up like we've done in LIV and the PGA, like we've done now in Saudi Arabia with our four teams. We're attracting all this talent from Europe, like we've done with all the boxing and so on and so on. And there was a tennis tournament last year in Diriyah. So why not? And the ATP has pretty much said, yes, absolutely, let's talk. And and there has been some interesting background. I mean, I'll give a couple of quotes from a couple of stars. John McEnroe, which is obviously a legend, has gone and commented. He pretty much said, after the current debacle in golf, this idea is a comical idea. Why would you go near them? So he's pretty much fired a warning. But then you have Nick Kyrgios, who's gone out and tweeted. Of course, he's a current player. Finally, they see the value. We are going to get paid what we deserve to get paid. Sign me up. So past players, they're shooting the alarm bells. Current players are saying, wow, this is time for us to get paid. What's going on, Rob?
Well, you know, it's the classic old school get off my lawn guy and new school I'm ready to get paid guy. You know, two different perspectives, but first and foremost, you know, you're right. The private investment fund is, you know, might as well be a co-host of this podcast, because we've pretty much discussed them virtually every week because they've been active. I mean, and again, at the end of the day, they want to be part of sport and on the global level, and where there's an opportunity for them to, you know, fund or sponsor, sports properties, they are active. They're not being a passive player. They're being very aggressive. And look, no one can blame the ATP, seeing the PGA, acquiesce and partner with the organization. It's one of the pro leagues that actually the athletes are independent contractors. You know, they work, you know, they're members of the association. They pay their expenses. They don't work for a team. They don't get a salary. They basically eat what they kill. You know, when they go to a tournament and they advance, you know, they get certain prize money, and you know, that's what they win. So, you know, seeing the PIF and Saudi investment into tennis, and it's just a matter of time before we see it. You know, not just in the ATP, but WTA as well, most likely. You know, both of those organizations could use, you know, some cash influx. Question is, are we going to see the the commentary, women, past champions, et cetera, may also be very, vocal. Now the question is, will the Saudis get involved in that? We don't know. But they have made that step with the men, and here we go. What does that mean? Does that mean they didn't launch a rival league like they did with LIV in comparison to the PGA Tour. This is more of the direct approach. Hey, can we buy in? Let's not go through the hassle of starting another tour, because we can, and we could, and maybe we will. And Nick Kyrgios might be the first guy to jump. He'll be like, pay me. I'm there. I'll be your flagship guy. Do you see a former, champion, I'm not saying that he would, but does a Federer come out of retirement for a stupid number to help launch a rival tennis league? Certainly could. Might be worth it. I mean, they were going to pay Tiger $800 million, and he can't walk 18 holes. So, at the end of the day, it's probably a very good financial thing for the game of tennis. As we said with golf, you will probably see a fifth major of some sort get created, and be held in Riyadh or, somewhere maybe in one of the Emirates or something, to where, it dwarfs, the financial winnings of the U.S. Open, Wimbledon, French Open, and the Australian Open collectively. You could win, $20 million by winning the Saudi Masters, kind of thing. Who knows? But money talks in this business. They have been very aggressive. It's a natural sport for them to get engaged and involved with, because you're not dealing with owners. You're dealing with a governing body or a league. Players are independent contractors, so therefore, more money in prize money is, they're all for that. And it's a fairly easy conversation to have. Here's another $100 million, $200 million, $300 million into your organization to increase infrastructure, prize money, upgrade certain venues, perhaps, and maybe they kick into some player travel and some of the international things, growing the sport internationally, all very positive results. It's not a I don't view it as a negative, but obviously, John McEnroe is just one of many. I'd love to hear, what some others have to say and kind of get their, their reason why, because it's not, again, they didn't start a rival tour. They didn't attack it in a way that they did golf. I can understand the sensitivities with a lot of the legends in golf, because they basically, they raided the cupboard a little bit. Hey, yeah. Dustin, yeah. Phil, Bubba, whatever, we're just paying you guys to leave to legitimize our, and this is one where they're actually coming, knocking on the front door with a, with a bag and going, hey, how can we help? Do you need help? Yeah. Could you use additional funding? The answer is yes. The answer is always yes. What's the catch? That's the question. I think we'll learn more about that, down the road. The question will be, do you see them jump into the women's game, where I think, obviously culturally would be interesting for them as well. But certainly,
they've tried to, and they got knocked back. WTA was raising a fund recently. And they chose the Saudis threw money at them, but they went with a company called CVC Holdings or of the sort. They raised $300 million. So they've tried with the women. It's a bit more complicated. As you said, they tried to sponsor the FIFA World Cup, the Women's World Cup, and there was huge backlash from the different the civil rights groups, and they've had to sort of re-engineer their campaign for that World Cup and only sponsor certain aspects of it and not like that, not the actual main World Cup. So we're seeing a bit of sensitivities around women's sports and the Saudis, and women's sports, like, don't get me wrong, they're doing great, but they need the money more than the men at this stage if they're going to develop and grow and try and grow their game. So I'm not sure why people are knocking this back. No country on earth has got a clean past. Everyone's got, you know, a dent somewhere. So it's just about sort of accepting and moving on and understanding they're coming to you to work with you, work with them. Maybe you can have a positive change on them. So anyway, sorry to cut you off, but they have tried that.
Yeah, no, and again, I mean, I figure that there's probably been attempts and there's reasons why they've been rebuffed at some point. And you know, but I think it all circles back to, you know, in the case here with what we're seeing in the ATP is that, you know, once again, you know, money can resolve, you know, it obviously helps, you know, enhance the league, enhance the organization, you know, increase in prize money. And when you're dealing with independent contractors as your primary talent, that speaks volumes. And it did in golf. And, you know, I think it will in men's tennis. I think you'll see, I think you'll see a high rate of acceptance, you know, from current players, and probably more recent, you know, if there's a recent player. I mean, you know, look, John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors, and you know, those players played in a totally different era, and you know, I'm surprised that McEnroe would be so anti, because if I'm the, you know, the Saudi fund, you know, he's kind of one of the guys I'd want to be one of my ambassadors, you know, of the game. So, you know, so at some level, maybe he cost himself his own payday by popping off a little early, but I don't know. We'll see. I would imagine that Pete Sampras and Jim Courier and a few other guys might be very interested.
Jim Courier is one. Yeah.
You know,
Jim, yeah. Jim's a bit of a face because he comes down to the Australian Open and he sort of gets around. But what is it with these Aussies jumping at the money straight away, at the Saudi money? You had Greg Norman first and then now Kyrgios, and who's next? Hey. Maybe Leighton Hewitt.
Hey, you know, Danny Ricciardo's out there too looking for a ride. Maybe they'll fund him.
Crazy. They're going to keep going. They're going to find people to work with because that's just the way the world works. It's interesting. These sports are finally getting the money that they deserve, and you know, it's a very exciting time. We are living once again. I know we said this multiple times. We are living in the golden age of sport, and we are very lucky to be a part of it. I'll move on to our next talking point. This one we spoke about last week. This one's a bit of a rivalry that's really heated up. Fanatics fights back to outbid DraftKings. They've come out of nowhere and they've submitted an offer of $225 million. That's a 50% increase on the original offer. And the funny part is that it was a cash offer that was unanimously recommended by the PointsBet board. So no objections. Yes, get it in and let's go. Boom. It was released. It was pretty much pushed through. Then DraftKings didn't even have time to sort of come back with anything. And they pretty much said they're out. So now the board, the shareholders will come together and vote on this deal. But what we're seeing is that why Fanatics really wanted this PointsBet deal is because it's going to accelerate their push into industry. It's going to give it the technology they need, the trading capabilities. And once again, the market access that PointsBet currently has now opens up doors for Fanatics, warm leads, warm path into these markets, not just for betting. They will incorporate other aspects of their business. Michael Rubin, this guy's unbelievable. He's just.
Well, he's got backing. He's got vision. He's got, you know, the you know, he's not afraid to make a bold move, and yeah. You know, and here we are in a case where, made a play for PointsBet. DraftKings responds, and you know, we talked about it last week. Hey, you know. If I'm PointsBet, I'm glad DraftKings got in because, you know, obviously it was an increase over the next deal. So if Fanatics really wanted it, they come back in with another offer, which they did. And oh, by the way, DraftKings did not meet, you know, their deadline or, you know, to formalize that, you know, their $195 offer. So, you know, look, the winner in this case is you know, the shareholders of PointsBet, right? They went from 150 to 225 on the sale in a week's time. And they were struggling and you know, having to shut our operations over here. So, you know, and again, we talked about it a little bit last week. You know, it gives Fanatics you know, key strategic hold in a platform that they have great interest in. They already have significant relationships globally through their merchandising relationships. I mean, there'll be a natural push for them to push out their, you know, whatever their, you know, their betting or fantasy or whatever their component's going to be under the PointsBet or you know, Fanatic Bet or whatever they end up calling it, you know, platform. And you know, again, it's diversifying a company that, you know, was primarily in, you know, that retail merchandise collectibles business, and now they've moved into, you know, a sector that's, you know, obviously a fast growing one here in the U.S., one that's globally accepted, and you know, they're a recognized name that will you know, now have a new offering to their global audience. So, you know, again, we, you know, tip of the cap to Michael Rubin, his executive team, you know, for, you know, not getting emotional, not getting pissed off, not saying anything bad. They just responded with what, you know, a sound, you know, well-run company is going to do if they wanted that asset, which they did. All right. Good for them. You know, here's my next offer. And that next offer was, you know, was significant enough to where, you know, I don't know if DraftKings is still on the clock or not, but you know, I think the folks at PointsBet are like, you know, get this thing done, let's close this thing, move along. And DraftKings had their moment. They showed that they didn't close it within the time frame, and Michael Rubin said, well, I'm not going to let that happen again. No fooling me twice.
Why
here.
Would they back out? Why would they back out? Why would DraftKings not go all the way here?
Don't know. You know, but at the end of the day, maybe their whole play was to call Fanatics bluff, see if they were really serious. And if they were going to buy it, then they were going to at least make them buy it for $75 million more than what they offered. So at the end of the day, maybe there's a few people that have a little shares in PointsBet that we don't know that work at DraftKings. I don't know.
But see, I would have looked at it a bit differently. It's like I would have fought to keep this little guy out from our industry, made him work harder. Because you know why? Because at the end of the day, this is my world. You're coming into my world.
Yeah,
I'm not going to make it easy for you, right? Because at the end of the day, business is war.
Maybe they miscalculated here, thinking that the you know, their $195 offer would have kept Fanatics, you know, at bay, that they wouldn't have coughed up more. you know, that, you know, Fanatics was probably interested interested at 150, not so interested at over 200. And guess what? They were. And maybe DraftKings wasn't interested in, you know, spending 250 to keep him out. Don't know, but, you know, again, you know, just as the world turns, Fanatics and DraftKings will be ones to keep an eye on, you know, at the next fantasy sports conference, because they'll be in the same room. We'll see how they interact.
Interesting. All right, let's see how that one plays out. Let's move on to our next talking point. This one was a very big one. Alpine F1 team raises $220 million. Now, that's point number one. The more interesting point is who invested. Ryan Reynolds, Rob McElhaney, Michael B. Jordan, Redbird Capital. Welcome to the world of F1. The Wrexham crew.
Yeah.
The Wrexham crew are coming to the world of F1. Interesting deal. Lots of excitement for the Renault team. You've been following this very closely, so I'll hand it over to you, buddy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, first and foremost, I mean, you know, an investment or a stake in an F1 team is not something that's really publicly ever out there. You know, those opportunities present themselves on a rare case to case basis. You know, they're not put out there, hey, we're offering up 24% of Alpine. You know, it's not out there in that normal brokerage type of way that you might be able to buy 8% of an NBA team or 20% of an MLB team. And when those deals do happen, they are not money deals. They're not influx of cash, because every one of those teams, from, you know, Red Bull all the way down to Williams, is not about a money play. Technically, I mean, it's not about funding, because $220 million, that's three races operating.
Sounds like a lot, but in that world, it's not.
Not a lot at all. Those deals are what's key about them. They're either technology related deals. What can you bring performance wise to make us go faster, or make us be better in some other way? Are you bringing something else that, you know, enhances our image, enhances our profile, therefore enhances our attractiveness to sponsors? And that's what this is. You bring Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhaney to the table with what you've seen with Wrexham, what you've seen with Ryan and his acquisitions of Aviation Gen, Mint Mobile. Those types of deals. The $224 million is nice. Look, that's the cost to play. Redbird Capital is obviously, you know, backing of the XFL. Maybe we're going to see Dwayne The Rock Johnson show up at, you know, in the paddock here soon. What's going to happen is now the Alpine, team, you know, which has two very good drivers, but they don't have Lewis Hamilton. They do not have Max Verstappen. They don't have Charles Leclerc. They don't have some of the faces that the casual F1 fan might know. You and I may know them because we follow the sport a little bit more. Someone else may know them because, oh, I saw them featured on Drive to Survive. But in the global space, I mean, sponsors aren't drawn to this team because, oh yeah, I'm going to spend $500 million on a livery in F1, and I'm just going to, you know, Ocon is is my favorite driver. But now when you get that pitch and Ryan Reynolds is talking about, hey, I'm bringing Aviation Gen, I'm bringing in Mint Mobile, and now we're going to tie this into what I'm doing at Wrexham, and we're going to kind of create a whole new Deadpool's going to be driving the car. Now you've got something that, you know, not only is good for F1, raising the profile, because obviously with their entry into it, brings a whole new fan in. But for that team, the sponsor, the eyeballs on that team, so value of sponsorship, value of their merchandising, value of their overall program, you know, just went up. And, you know, that, you know, because we've got a client that's very interested in getting, you know, getting a stake into an F1 team. But it's, you know, you don't knock on the door and say, hey, I've got X amount of million. Can I get in? They're not taking those calls. You know, it's got to be a strategic play. So that's, you know, that therein lies some of the challenge, unless there's going to be, unless we see the current Concord allows for 13 teams on the grid. So we'll see if there is going to be, additional teams. But right now, I think one of the goals with F1 is to continue to keep it 10, continue to see the valuation of every team get over $1 billion. And then you might see, a couple new teams added at that billion plus number. But they're not going to let anybody else in for under $1 billion. And until they, and it'll be hard for them to justify that until they got every team on the grid worth $1 billion. And that deal, what valued it at a little over $900 million. Is that what, I think that was the,
yeah,
where the calculations came out.
Yeah.
And that it will quickly go over $1 billion the minute Ryan Reynolds turns his marketing machine on it. And Redbird Capital says, hey, here's what we'll kick into it. Then all of a sudden, I think they're, when we see those guys hit the grid next, you're going to see, you will notice the impact. And, it will be quite interesting to follow to see, one, not only how that team does, what's going to be the monkey see, monkey do, who's next? Do we see another team look to replicate that? You know, much like we saw teams, going out and, getting, more, athletes involved, athlete investors in some of the, other sports. Here's obviously the Hollywood strength, but I mean, again, not just Hollywood. This is not just, this isn't Tom Cruise deciding he wants to, get involved in Formula One because he's going to be doing Days of Thunder 2 and he wants it to be a Formula One angle. No, it's not that. It's, Ryan Reynolds is he's a great actor, or I should say an entertaining actor. He's a better marketer and he's proven it, and a better businessman. And those are things that the entire evolution of Wrexham and the evolution of the brands that he's been associated with is what makes him attractive as an investor or a partner in a deal for F1. He's not bringing anything to the table that's going to help the car go faster or help the driver drive better or anything else. He is but what he has done is he's, call it the Messi effect. I'm curious to see what their Twitter following and their social media following for the team. What has it done since they've announced? I mean, Ryan Reynolds took, Wrexham from 0 to 3 million followers, just in the time of their ownership. I'm curious to what, you just watch some of those little things, those immediate things that you can track. He's going to raise the profile of that team, raises the value of that team, raises the value of the sponsorship for that team. Oh, by the way, he's picking up the phone and calling United Airlines and putting them on the front of the jersey of a fifth division club in European soccer. And hey, United, I now have a Formula One team. We fly around too. What do you think? You want to come over here? Sure, Ryan, I really like what you're doing for us with your soccer team. Let's come over there and work with you on your Formula One team. Boom. All of a sudden, those guys are flying, United. So, again, watch this one closely. You're going to start to see new sponsors. You're going to see that valuation of that team jump. And I would suspect that we'll see a few others, start to – poke around the paddock and see if there's another opportunity, maybe similar to this. But I don't know that there's anybody out there that kind of has the unique combination of what, Ryan Reynolds brings, not only, you know, from a star power standpoint, but also his savviness as a businessman and a marketer.
Two things. America's got a new Formula One team. Now it's going to represent America because now Ryan Reynolds is going to push it all through the States, and it's going to be a huge following there. Disney Plus will try and get in on the action for a similar series. They're going to have to fight with Netflix. He might change the game there, actually, and start impacting things. The other thing is, I think Repsol might have a new sponsor in Renault because because now it's about working with these two assets. I think they're going to work, as you said, hand in hand. So Wrexham being in Europe, it's definitely a possibility with all the assets that they own and all the growth that they're seeing, and the US market being so big, everybody now wants to advance into it, and I think this is a perfect example of making this team as the pillar owned by, you know, Hollywood actor. These Hollywood actors, now that the US will follow very, very closely. Because let's not forget Michael B. Jordan, right? Because he's a huge profile too.
That's right. You'll see Creed 4 probably on the livery of this Formula One team at some point. And you know, Ryan Reynolds is Canadian, first of all. They consummated this deal at the Canadian Grand Prix. And there is an American team with Haas, but again, it's, you know, it's one of the, you know, it's in the, you know, bottom part of the, you know, of the grid. And, you know, last I heard, Gene Haas wasn't selling. He wasn't taking on new partners. And he would prefer to just take your money, not your expertise. So, you know, again, you need to find the right mix. And again, these, like I said, these deals are not, you know, there's, you don't walk down the paddock and someone's got a for sale sign sitting out front of it, right? Or, you know, looking for partners. They're always looking for, they're looking for strategic alliances. And in the case where, you know, a Ryan Reynolds group or a Redbird Capital approaches any one of the teams in the paddock and says, you know, we're interested in getting involved, you know, it's going to be financial, but it's got to be financial plus. I mean, we've talked about the sovereign wealth funds that are, you know, all represented on the grid, you know, their involvement is sure, certainly financial in most of those cases. For an opportunity to get into a minority stake, you really do need to bring more to the table than just, you know, funding. You've got to have some, you know, either technical expertise, something that's going to make them go faster, something that's going to make them more attractive to be more valuable. And we have that here. And look, I think you're right. I think you're going to see it, you know, as we add a third Grand Prix here in the U.S., I can guarantee you Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhaney are going to be in Vegas. There's going to be, you know, there's probably going to be, a lot of appearances of them in the upcoming the upcoming season of Drive to Survive. You might see some cross promotional stuff where their drivers come out to Wrexham and make some appearances there, because I mean there will be some very natural crossover for time of year, and certainly, you know, the game is one that their drivers are fans of, and you know, look, it's driving up the value of one team, and it's certainly going to enhance the value of the one they currently own with Wrexham. So it's going to be, you know, as a marketer, look forward to sitting here and watching the chess pieces get moved on this one, and I think it'll be fun to watch.
Well, you got the upcoming Wrexham tour, right? So
yeah, they're coming over here.
Yeah, so they come into the US because the US is the holy land of sports and business. Don't worry about Canada. Canada's like Australia.
Canada's nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's a great North American partnership.
That's all it is. But in terms of business,
yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why I said America's got a new F1 team, because that's what he's done with Wrexham. Wrexham, he's made Americans feel like this is their team. Through Disney's activations, through his activations, through using ESPN and whatnot. And I can almost guarantee you it's going to be a similar path. So we're going to see now what we've seen with Wrexham, but I think on steroids a bit more, because F1 is like the big dog, you know what I mean? It's on an international level. You sort of wave the flag a bit, right? So...
Yeah.
So now this is going to be a completely different level to Wrexham, and we're going to see a lot of intrigue. And as you said, look, Redbird Capital also owns stake in AC Milan, works with the Fenway Sports Group. So there's a lot of potential star power that could get involved in this. So it's interesting. It's interesting to see how this actually plays out, but. We'll sit back and watch, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it moving forward.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you and I have a topic on them in the next couple of weeks.
For sure, they're definitely going to start making noise. Speaking of American owners, Chelsea, Mr. Todd's been getting up to business. He's making things happen, and. This is becoming a very familiar story. Clubs owning multiple clubs around the world, using them as pathways, as talent academies, agencies, whatever you want to call them. It's a whole new different business model. And the consortium Blue Co., which is the owners of Chelsea and whatnot, has reached an agreement to become majority shareholders of French club Strasbourg. Strasbourg was a third-tier club. In the French soccer division, and now they're playing in League One. They finished 15th last season in League One. But are we seeing another Wrexham story here? Is Todd gone? He's gone. I'm going to France. I've seen these guys come up all the way. A bit different because they've already made it up. But you know, they're buying an asset that's worked its way up. It's got potential now to inject all these funds into it because the hard work is there, the team chemistry is there, because for them to do what they've done, you need a lot of that. You need to play for one another. You need to have an understanding of one another's games, and you have to be one tight-knit team to get through all that adversity and hardship. And Todd's has come across and said, yeah, we'll buy you. We'll inject some funds into you from what the Saudis have invested in Clearwater. And, yeah, we'll just make it all come together.
Might loan out a couple of my Chelsea guys that aren't working out here, but I still own them, and I'll send them down there to get sharp. And look, you know, look, timing-wise, League One is going to start to look pretty wide open with PSG, you know, losing Messi, shipping out Mbappe, and Ramos heading, either over to MLS or perhaps to Saudi, who knows? But you know that team may not be as strong, and so they may look at that as one. You know, French League One is probably the fourth, fifth league in Europe.
Yeah, top five.
Yeah, it's top five, it's some may say Bundesliga 2, you know, outdraws them, but as an opportunity, it's the ability to move and play some players still at a top level to get them quality minutes, and then but to loan them out and still control them. And if they're going to do any work for you, they do it on a club that you own in another league, which, you know, isn't bad. But you're right. I mean, you're starting to, it's a trend clubs own strategic you know, multiple clubs and in strategic locations. You know, we were talking about the Qatari group owning, you know, owning PSG and owning strategic holds, you know, around the world, so that, you know, teams in Brazil and, you know, City Group doing the same thing and owning multiple, you know, franchises around the world, so that, that, you know, they have a presence, you know, both from scouting and player development, but also, you know, having some places to loan out, you know, some talent, for, you know, Premier League talent that maybe needs, you know, some seasoning, or in some cases, maybe they made a poor purchase. They don't want to take a bath on a transfer, you know, because they've been sitting a guy and he's not playing on their Premier League roster, but they can loan him out, you know, to Strasbourg, and maybe, you know what, maybe he has a resurgence, maybe, you know, has a, you know, 25 goal season, and now a Serie A team's a little bit more interested, and that transfer fee is a little bit higher than it would have been had he been a bench warmer at Chelsea. So, I mean, again, you know, strategic move, and financially, certainly a drop in the bucket to what they paid for Chelsea. And I think there's upside there, right? I mean, I think it's, you know, you're in a league that just, you know, the top of the table is coming back to the pack a little bit for next year. Assuming, you know, as it looks right now. I mean, obviously Mbappe hasn't gone anywhere yet. You know, Messi is apparently, you know, arriving here on July 21st to play his first game. It'll be interesting. But you know, look, Todd's got to make some good moves here. I mean, you know, again, you know, I think you know, taking this summer to assess the Chelsea situation, you know, invest in, you know, in the sport, you know, sometimes this is the time to double down, you know, get another, I mean, not just admit mistakes and ship players out, you know, to another league and never see them again. Maybe that, you know, he's got some players that still have value that need to, you know, need a little rehab project, and maybe playing in League One is just what the doctor ordered, at, you know, where they can go and still play top level European soccer. Maybe elevate the club and also elevate their transfer price, or they earn a trip back to Chelsea because they got their confidence back, and they, maybe it was a humbling experience. Like you said, it's a club that's got great, great chemistry. You know, they, you know, fought their way up from third division all the way up to the, you know, the top, you know, the first division. And, you know, that's inserting a player in, you know, into an environment like that after coming from an environment that Chelsea had for the majority of the season might be refreshing for some of those players. And for some of them, it may be a wake up call and say, hey, maybe I got to just check my ego at the door and come here just to play the game I love. And they find themselves performing at a top level and going, you know, if we had this at Chelsea, we'd be better. Maybe that's, you know, my mission is to go back there and kind of bring this culture. And maybe, you know, or not, but I mean, it could also just be like, hey, I'm playing the game, I'm enjoying it, and so wherever I go next, that's what I'm going to look for. And some of them may say, can I stay here permanently? And, you know, who knows? Yeah. You may have a Leicester City, you know, in Strasbourg, you know, coming out of nowhere to, you know, snag a title and get themselves into the Champions League, and who knows what can happen next. Go figure.
That definitely changes the game. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, once again, we'll sit back and watch and just see how things play out. Let's stay in the world of football, slash soccer. Barcelona signs partnership with Logan Paul's Prime. Wow. They're leaving Gatorade to sign with Prime as their new energy drink sponsor. This is phenomenal because another big team that also signed with Prime is Arsenal. And everyone's looking at it as, you know, as a pathway into the American market, so on and so on. Yeah, it is. But it's also a pathway into this Gen Z world where that's who follows these guys, right? It's a pathway to staying relevant and becoming a a club that becomes a destination club for fans in that age group, which are very hard to interact and engage because their behaviors are very different to millennials and other age groups. That's what it is, in my opinion. But it's big moves. If they're ditching Gatorade for Prime, it's what's going on. I don't know if you've tested Prime, because I haven't, because I refuse to fall into the hype.
Well, look, it's I would say it's a move that predicated on two things. One, Gatorade, is the 800-pound gorilla. And in many cases, they have relationships, across the world in global sport. And sometimes, they just have a number of what they'll pay you. Okay. And it's, it's Gatorade and I would say that Barcelona is still going to say we're Barcelona. And Barcelona is, if there's ever a time where they really need to take advantage of their market value. They're going back. They won La Liga, going back to Champions League. Messi's not coming back, and Gatorade may have maintained that if Messi came back, but Gatorade probably gave him a take it or leave it offer. And Prime, Arsenal's nice. Arsenal's a nice get. This is FC Barcelona. It's a global brand, and for them, I would imagine that they came in at a higher number. I promise you that the athletes will still be drinking Gatorade out of a Prime bottle, but you and I both know that the eyeballs are going to look at Prime. The Prime's going to use this to find ways to push more product, open up the Spanish market, the European market, with
the world.
It's going to explode it, and there's some young players on FC Barcelona that fit their profile. You got Logan Paul, out there going to be marketing like crazy. Don't be shocked to see, maybe a better deal down the road, where they could start finding their way in, Jake bringing his betting brand over. I mean, so it's a big deal, not shocking, but one that I think will, be a great deal for both of them. Now it's how they market it, how they leverage it, how they activate it. Will depend on how successful it's going to be. I think it makes sense, and I think both brands have a lot of reason to work together to see it succeed.
For sure, absolutely. Barcelona has the Barcelona Academy, which goes to over 30 countries around the world, and all those. All the age groups are from like 7 years old to like 14, 15 years old, which is who these are the kids that follow KSI and Logan Paul.
Yeah.
So that's thousands, tens of thousands of kids around the world. So this is a huge partnership. It's going to be really interesting to see which other clubs will follow suit. But all the best to them. Let's move to a different style of football. The NFL in Germany sells out in 15 minutes. Wow. Listen to this. 1.2 million fans tried to get an NFL ticket in Germany. The Vivid Seats told Front Office Sports that their site traffic for the game spiked by 753% from Monday to Tuesday. It's the second most expensive average ticket price at $854 of an NFL season. What the hell is going on? Why has the NFL hit in Germany that others are not seeing? There's definitely an appetite. The people are hungry for NFL.
Germany is one of the has one of the top domestic leagues. They have one of the top teams in ELF, and you know, to get a ticket for one of the three games that's played in London, you know, they limit how many European, you know, again, kind of like some of the teams have done, you know, they got to know where your zip code is. Only a certain amount of those tickets for those three games that are played in London are made available, you know, are available to European fans. So obviously the game in Germany, you know, is kind of that one. And two, I mean, look, the game's at an all time high, right? You know, you're seeing, you know, domestic leagues, you know, popping up, or domestic leagues in pretty much, you know, throughout Europe. Or, you know, ELF is entering its third season as a, you know, kind of a reincarnated version of NFL Europe. The game itself is massively popular. And, you know, if you're a fan of football, you want to see football in its highest form, just like, you know, us as soccer fans want to see Premier League, or we want to see World Cup, you know, the Argentinas of the world, the Brazils of the world play the game at the highest level. If you are a football fan, the highest level of this game is the NFL. And if it's going to be, you know, in your country or next year country, and you can get to it, or have a chance to get to it, you know, this is, you know, for some of them, maybe a once in a lifetime opportunity. You know, there's speculation certainly down the road that the NFL, you know, perhaps may be kind of the, you know, their outreach to kind of make a decision on whether or not they do create a European division, you know, down the road. You know, do we see additional franchises? I mean, real franchise. We're playing real games now. The next step is, do we put teams in London? Do we put teams in Paris and in Berlin and, you know, Madrid and the like? So what happens next? We'll see. But, you know, the game's just incredibly popular, you know, and this is just certainly a byproduct of supply and demand, you know, more than anything else. You know, there are four games played in Europe. Three of them are played in London. And getting those tickets as a European is, you know, very difficult. And so, you know, I would imagine that it was a Taylor Swift debacle of some sorts, probably when folks sitting there in the queue, hoping to see their number get pulled up so that they could buy two tickets or four tickets or whatever it was. But, you know, you referenced the folks at Vivid Seats. I mean, the secondary market for that game is going to be crazy. And I would imagine that there is quite a few of the tickets purchased will be sold on a secondary market for a nice markup.
Interesting. Let's see how that pans out.
Let me know if you want to go. Let me know if you want to go to the game. We know a guy.
People might take you up, mate. You better be careful.
Yeah.
All right. Let's keep moving. DirecTV has agreed to a multi-year deal to carry NFL Network and NFL Red Zone. Why I thought this one was interesting is because DirecTV just lost its Sunday Ticker assets to YouTube TV. And now to bring on the different side of football, where it's all about, you know, the talk shows, the analysis, the experts talking about, you know, the game and so on, is very interesting. Where do you see this move going, and how will this compensate what they've lost?
It won't compensate what they lost, but the Red Zone, you know, is something that was a very popular part of, you know, that DirecTV package. You know, they had their own, but it was a standalone as part of their, obviously they had the ticket. You know, now with the ticket gone, the ability to kind of now partner in with the NFL Network and their their red zone. And Andrew Siciliano is now out. His program's out, and they bring in, you know, the NFL Network. I mean, I think a couple things. One, DirecTV still wanted that association with the Shield, and that's what this gives them. NFL Network is not, included in the standard DirecTV package. You got to get the enhanced package. So, there are probably still some football junkies out there, certainly some fantasy football junkies that watch more of the red zone than they watch anything else. And so, I think it's a way to kind of still capture and create, DirecTV, provide value. And drive viewership to DirecTV. I think it's also something that all of their, sports bar relationships want. They have that DirecTV subscription, and maybe this is something that, helps, keep those customers happy, because it's, I think we all are, going to be very interested to see how the YouTube DirecTV ticket platform works, how successful it is. I mean, just like we're watching how well Apple does with MLS, the streaming partners could have some glitches. There could be some areas, and DirecTV has kind of set itself up, endeared itself, if you will, to the NFL by putting their network and their red zone as their kind of Sunday football offering. And it's always good to stay close to the big dog in these cases. And so I think it in that way they made a strategic move to still keep some NFL football driven content on their channels, and make it valuable. And again, it's not going to replace what they lost, but it it gives them a branded element and keeps them puts their brand next to the Shield, which ultimately I think is a good thing.
So an interesting fact: Amazon Thursday night stream is white labeled NBC, right? They use NBC stack, the NBC technology, to stream the game because they don't have the technology to do it just yet. Imagine YouTube turned around and did that with DirecTV.
And they said, hey, we'd love to have your red zone package.
Wow.
Okay. Sure, it's going to cost you double.
Yeah. interesting times. All right.
Yeah. And again, it'll be interesting to see, does Andrew Siciliano pick up the phone and call YouTube and go, my red zone channel is now available. We'll see. He's obviously, a recognizable face, and we'll see. But, I think it was one of those things where if you're DirecTV and you've got a chance to, stay close to the Shield, then that's where you go. And they did.
Absolutely. Interesting. Let's see what happens. Let's keep going. Our last talking point, it's been a long episode. One Championship partners with Media City Qatar. So those of you that don't know what Media City Qatar is, Qatar's built this city where it's built out, ready to go for over 60 media outlets around the world. They come there, they use it as a place to film, do their shows, do all these different media activities. They also have an element of it that's for entrepreneurs, influencers, and so on. It's a mechanism of attracting talent and companies and organizations to Qatar who otherwise would not come, basically. One Championship is the biggest fighting championship or biggest fighting league in the Asian region. They're opposition to the UFC. I'd say they're the second largest after the UFC, even though the PFL claims to be. I don't think so. They pretty much agreed on a partnership where they will work together to start producing all these live martial arts events, in Qatar, starting in Qatar and trying to sort of venture throughout the Middle East. The key to this partnership is Bein Sports. Bein Sports will come in as a partner and also distribute these shows through their network, which is a huge network, specifically in the Middle East and even through Europe and all these other regions, because they buy up a lot of these soccer rights or football rights or whatever you want to call it in these different regions. So we're seeing Qatar now coming into the fold. Qatar's looking for events after the World Cup to keep people coming back there. They've gone and taken out the FIBA, the volleyball, all these other World Cup-like events, but so they can keep the tourism coming through now that they've built all this infrastructure for it. So that's an interesting partnership that I thought that we could sort of talk about, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, I think you hit it on the head. I mean, Qatar is looking for life after World Cup. They've made the investment, and there's going to be challenger brands that are going to be be in a great position. I mean, obviously, UFC wasn't going to be an option. We talked several weeks ago about PFL's involvement with the Saudis, with Nagano and kind of creating the African League and kind of pushing in that way. And and you're right. I think one is one championship. I kind of remember for a little bit further back, when it was Pride and in those groups, Lion Fight, a few others, Muay Thai fighting. I mean,
Strike Force,
Strike Force. I mean, and you now kind of have a, it's not a stretch move. I think it's a move that it's a viable brand, and it's one that already has a pretty good following. It makes sense for them to, partner with Qatar and produce their content there. We've seen that the UAE and Saudi Arabia have been big movers in the combat game, both with UFC and with premium boxing. Qatar, I'm going to emulate that, but I'm not going to do what you're doing. I'm going to go in a different direction and get one that I can call my own. And this is an opportunity for them to build with someone who, hey, we're a pretty good league too. We've got great content, but we're not going to go to Saudi and be the second or third fiddle. We're going to go to Qatar and we're going to be your number one game, your number one fight game. So it makes a lot of strategic sense. And we'll see obviously distribution and things of that nature. But I think it's a wise move for both, because there's a natural built-in audience that comes with them. And for the league standpoint, you're getting that technology, you're getting that that infrastructure. And you've got and look, there's probably a little bit of financial support snuck in there as well. Yeah, absolutely. Let's see how that grows. We see a nice pop in their purses and in their pay-per-views and in their attendance. And to your point, got to keep finding ways to have people come to Qatar to experience, the infrastructure that was built for the World Cup. And, this is, no different than cities like Vegas and Abu Dhabi and the like. I mean, they continue to build, and to attract, using sports tourism is a big deal. This is another way for, those fans of the one championship to say, hey, I'm going to see, the fights in Doha. Let's go, let's get there and let's go see the fight. That's now they kind of become part of the travel calendar, the travel sports calendar, for those fans. And, if they have good fights, which I imagine they'll come out of the gate with a kick-ass card right out of the gate, something you can't get in boxing anymore, because the good guys won't fight to each other. They may be on the card, but they're all fighting tomato cans. You know, you need that. You need, you know, this is the one thing Dana White always does. And here we are tipping our cap to Dana White. He's worked his way into this podcast again. But
thank you all for tuning in. We'll catch you all next week. Take care, everyone. Goodbye.